Welcome to Gonkcast, a long-form discussion podcast about the music of English electronic duo Autechre, album by album, EP by EP. I'm Gabe.
And I'm Dan.
In this episode, we're talking 1997, featuring Autechre's first truly divisive LP and fourth LP overall, Chiastic Slide, plus the Envain and Sickly Sweet EPs. I should mention that we've skipped over 1996, a very quiet year for Autechre. The only significant release was the vinyl-only single We Are RY, which we might get into on a future Odds and Ends episode. Let us know if it's a must-hear release. Gonkcastpod@gmail.com. And on that note, we're going to work a few of your emails into the discussion today, but we'll get to the rest on another listener email bonus episode next week. We'll also talk about the first Peel session on that episode, so stay tuned and be sure to email us if you've got thoughts to share on the Peel session, Chiastic Slide, Envain, Sickly Sweet, or literally anything else. Again, gonkcastpod@gmail.com. Lastly, if you still haven't told a friend about the podcast and left us a 5-star rate and review wherever you're listening right now, we'd really appreciate it if you did. Also, follow us on Twitter, YouTube. Okay, enough shilling. Dan, what background information do we need to know about Chiastic Slide?
Yeah, so Autechre broke their streak of releasing a classic every November by waiting until February, February 24th, 1997, to drop Chiastic Slide. In a 2016 interview, Sean said that they thought Warp was going to hate Tri-Repete, and when they didn't, it gave us the confidence to do what we really wanted. So on Chiastic, we went all out to be as weird as possible. I think that's when quite a few people jumped ship. Indeed, in contrast to Tri-Repete, Chiastic Slide was not as well received. All Music, for instance, says it pales in comparison to the duo's earlier work and complains the album has too few ideas for its near 70-minute length, and the duo seem content with short loops being repeated again and again for up to 10 minutes on a single track. In the years since, though, Chiastic Slide has become something of a fan favorite. It slowly worked its way up to a 3.65 rating on Rate Your Music, and in 2017, Fact Magazine declared it an influential and enduring classic.
Yeah, funny enough, Chiastic Slide was the first unbolded Autechre album on Rate Your Music until the site changed its ranking algorithm like this week. I think it was going to get there anyway because it was, like you said, slowly working its way up. But hey, welcome to the Bolded Club, Chiastic Slide. Let's talk about that for a second, though, as we always do. What is your sense of this album's, you know, stature among fans right now, Dan?
Yeah, I mean, it always kind of seems like, you know, it's that album that comes after the real big classic.
Yeah.
You know, Tri-Repete is the kind of record that, like, people who aren't Autechre fans, but, you know, just maybe dabble in electronic music or you know, just know the big, you know, indie kind of hits, like, people know. And then, you know, coming off of that, Chiastic seems like such a drop. I don't mean a quality drop. I just mean, like, a fan base drop. You know, it is divisive. It's always sort of like, I don't know. It always seems sort of forgotten. I mean, even personally, and I guess this will get into my previous familiarity, but, you know, this is always a record that I've listened to, like, when I'm gonna go through a lot of Autechre. You know, it's not been like one that I've gone to just on its own very much. So this is really like a time I you know, for the first time was digging real deep into it. You know, I'll save my thoughts on how that worked out or whatever, but yeah. I think I had a similar, like, experience as a lot of people.
Yeah, you know, I think I mentioned with Tri-Repete that it was such a classic that it's now entered that territory of you can seem kind of cool and interesting if you talk shit about it. this is the opposite. This was like the one that was so shit on that you could be kind of cool and interesting if you claimed it's like your favorite Autechre album. And yet I think it's sort of reaching like a legitimate, you know, classic status through that. You know, that's what happens. Like, things get, you know, they get dismissed by one era and then the next era rediscovers it. And I feel like it's pretty much on its way. Like, I would expect, what it'll be like 2 years from now, we'll get the 25th anniversary pieces on all of these, like, music publications declaring it a classic, like, misunderstood in its time kind of a thing. But yeah, as for my, you know, personal experience, and, you know, we always like to go over this because some stuff will be newer to us than others. You know, I basically fell for it when I was first getting into Autechre. I think that my sense was that Chiastic Slide was pretty disliked. And so I pretty much just skipped it. you know, not only does it come after, you know, like the disappointment after Try Repete, but it's also followed by LP5, which is another quite acclaimed mm-hmm. album. So it's like that little thing just in the middle. And I skipped right over it at the time. It wasn't honestly until like the around the NTS sessions time that I actually started listening to this. But I didn't spend like as nearly as much like, you know, focus and attention as I did these last 2 weeks. So it was a little bit new for me. Funny enough, though, there is a, you know, when I was young, I was really into skateboarding, and there's a skate video, Audio's One Step Beyond. It was my first skate video ever. I adored it, watched it 100 times. The opening track is Two from this album.
And nice.
So technically, that was like my first ever time hearing Oddtecker. I always thought it was a very cool track, and it's just so funny to think that I was like 12 or 13, just like really enjoying Oddtecker without knowing it was Oddtecker. So
yeah, that's pretty cool, actually.
In some way, this is where it all started for me, even though I never actually spent much time on it before now. Okay, so I want to stick with our usual practice of pretending it's 1997 or, you know, whatever year the album we're discussing came out. So that being said, how would you describe the overall sound of Chiastic Slide?
I think the obvious, you know, descriptors are... It's much more noisy than previous work, and industrial, you know, which I guess those two kind of things, you know, go hand in hand. I think we've like firmly left the world of, you know, sounds you recognize. You know, we've talked about in our previous episodes with, you know, sometimes, you know, knowing a drum machine. I'm sure people can pick out some of the synths because people are, you know, super good at that. But I always kind of think of it with the drums, and you know, here, like, some of the drum sounds are just like literal static noises, and like you know, just actual, you know, noises. There's nothing that really you know, comes across as a obvious, like, this is from, you know, such and such machine, or, you know, or, you know, sound, or even like, this is obviously a snare, which I, you know, we kind of talked about with I can't remember which record, but you know, we were getting to that point. I think at this point we've fully gotten there.
Yeah, you know, I think so. I mean, I think that I'm struck by just how like dirty and gritty and like rough around the edges this album is. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, Try Repete had a certain I don't know, just crispness about it.
Yeah, like all the
sounds. Yeah, all the sounds were like really, I mean, there was a lot of like really glitchy, noisy stuff, but it was like very like hard cut, like just really clear mm-hmm. sounds. You could listen and you could like really focus in on any sound you wanted. This is like quite a dense murk of an album. You know, and I know I want to ask you, you know, you mentioned like an industrial quality to this album, but why does it seem so different? Because I would also use industrial to describe Try Repete. I'd also use glitchy to describe Try Repete. Why does it sound so different?
Yeah, I mean, that's honestly a good point, because I would use those descriptors with Try Repete, and I'm sure I probably did on that episode. I think what makes it different, like, really is in the... you know, the sort of recording end of things. You know, like you said, it's got that kind of... like Try Repete was much like of a cleaner, you know, hard cut kind of sound, and this is you know, this is almost the punk Oddtecker record or something.
Yeah,
you know,
I was gonna say that
it's like the garage band Oddtecker, you know,
I was gonna say this is like Chiastic Slide is Oddtecker's Yeezus, or Yeezus is Kanye West. Chiastic Slide might be more accurate, but yeah, it's like this weird like raw like garage rock version of this band that had like just previously perfected like very intricate complex sound design, you know. Another thing that's so striking to me about it is like how, I don't know, claustrophobic the mix is. I think that's what you're getting at. It's like there's not a lot of deep, you know, subterranean bass on this at all, like not much low end. It all feels kind of like crammed into like one, you know, kind of like the middle of the, you know, sonic area here. It just makes it like hard to pick things out. And, you know, I think about like, I don't know, a track like Calbrook or whatever. You know, it's a pretty emblematic sound because of the album, because it's like got this booming bass drum, but it's completely blown out. You know, it just sounds like your speakers are completely blown. And that's like, you know, where you're looking for the usual kind of like deep, low-end groan that we heard on Triripete and Amber and stuff. Instead, it's like just blown out, distorted, abrasive, like a mess, you know? It almost sounds like a, like demos or something.
Yeah, I mean, I really like it, though. On that track, you know, you just mentioned, I don't, Cal Brook or whatever, like that bass sound is like so cool. Because you're right, it is weird, you know, like it feels like it should be, or I think, you know, I think somebody else, or, you know, a different artist like would make it like a big booming thing, but then to take it and just make it this like blown out, like, you know, broken speaker kind of sound is super interesting. And I think, you know, very creative. But yeah, I mean, it's odd. I listened to this in my car a little bit, you know, and I think it's like really kind of noticeable that, that bass is, I don't want to say that it's missing, you know, because that implies that like it should be there and it's not. I think it's fine what they've done with, you know, sticking in that middle of the sonic range. It's just a strange thing, because in this style of music, usually that bass is like so you know, present.
Yeah. I just think, you know, I think it's great, but I mean, I feel like if I was alive in 1997, at this point, I would just be getting used to the fact that every Autechre album was going to be like a wild change in direction, because just everything about Triripete that is so glorious to me, just like the intricacy of it, the complexity of it. I mean, this is like really, it's really raw. It's really like pared back. It's really grimy. You know, it's just very, very different to me, but like very, very interesting. So usually I like to throw some, you know, little sentences from reviews and stuff at you to see what you think, but we got a bunch of really great listener emails, you know, sort of reinforcing my theory that, like, I don't know, Chiastic has this kind of like fan favorite quality to it. Like, some people feel really, really passionate about it. Not as many emails, but some really, really deep emails we got. So, you know, we got a listener email from Chris, and he said, please consider bitrate reduction when re-listening to Chiastic Slide. And on that note, we got another listener email from Robert, who said, I love what they do with drone and noise on here, like real staticky machines left on overnight drones, not the full digital hellscape noise of post-2000s AE. Reddick, AC, and Nuane get minimal with their noise and drones and create startlingly chilly, lonely soundscapes that flirt with being non-musical altogether. I mean, we've started to get into this. But yeah, I mean, that is like the defining feature, I think, of this release, is the noisiness of it. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I don't know, what do you make of that? Like, it's interesting because it sounds like we're still in the analog era of Autechre for the most part. And yet it does have, just like a real, I don't know, glitchy, noisy bitrate reduction. You know what I mean? Like, why does like the reducing bitrate, why doesn't it end up sounding like a digital hellscape like later AE, you know?
Yeah, I don't know that I have an answer to that. But you're right. You know, you would, I mean, you know, bitrate is a digital concept, so you would think it would turn into, you know, what we get later, but it doesn't. I really don't know why. I mean, it really is like a lo-fi kind of quality to it.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't think I have an answer.
I mean, it's just mysterious to me, because like, you listen to a track like Recury, right? Mm-hmm. And it's got this absolutely bizarre, like, bit crushed loop. You know, it sounds like a skipping record or something. And yet, instead of having like a, you know, skipping record sound, I mean, it's got like quite a digital destroyed quality to it. Mm-hmm. It's like, I don't know, I just think of like if you took the wave file, crumpled it into a ball like a piece of paper or something, and then unrolled it and let it play, you know, like,
yeah,
that's this sound is like unbelievable to me. It's just like, I don't know, it's remarkable and just makes it like a weird, you know, unique thing. Also, I want to highlight what Robert said about like non-musical aspects. I mean, that's pretty much like a noise composition. There is melody layered on there, but a lot of these tracks, like Reddick AC, which he mentioned, is like, it's just a noise composition. I mean, like, they're almost doing sound collage on a lot of these tracks.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, to go with the collage thing, I love the way the first track, was it C Patter? like
your guess is as good as mine.
Yeah, like transitions into Redick AC, you know. Like
right,
I love the way those two like back together. It like really does kind of give it that like sound collage-y, you know, kind of thing, you know, because it just kind of ends and immediately goes to this completely different, you know, the C-patter is kind of like one of the more musical tracks on the record.
Yeah.
And then it goes straight into like just literally, you know, noise, you know, just literal noise, and such like an abrupt, but like such a great, like I think it's my favorite like thing on the record is that transition between those two. But it, I mean, even like, you know, when you say like Redick AC is just like this, I mean, it really just is like this kind of staticky noise, you know, like Merzbow kind of thing. But
it sounds like when you know, like are rubbing something up against a microphone or something, mm-hmm. you know, it's like, yeah. I think about, you know, maybe this isn't the most relatable analogy, but you know, like we like to record little like field recordings that we sometimes incorporate into our own like, you know, experimental pieces that we make. And you know, sometimes you don't want to look like an asshole, like you're obviously recording somebody, so you stick your phone in your pocket and you walk up near them.
Yeah.
And then the thing is ruined because all you can hear is like, you know, and like they yeah. made a whole song out of that basically.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, they're smarter than us. We always had to throw those kind of things away. But right. Yeah, no, that sound is exactly what it sounds like. If nobody's done that, stick your phone in your pocket and record for a couple of minutes. But I mean, I don't know. There's something about it though, like they work the like musical and the non-musical so well and blend them so well together. I think like, you know, when you say something like Redick AC is this like, you know, harsh noise kind of thing, it's like it's not really harsh, you know. I don't think it's like I mean, I'm not saying it's easy listening, or you know, don't get me wrong, but yeah. You know, I don't think it's like, I don't think you have to be a Merzbow fan or something to like be able to appreciate Redick AC. Like, do you get what I'm getting at?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, because like Redick AC, I'll just say I think it's like an absolutely brilliant track. Mm-hmm. Sounds like you like it too. You know, because it's just like a weird sound collage of like noise and like, you know, it's not just that like rubbing against a mic sound, but there's also like this weird kind of drill, like sped up, you know, something like some gears being like turned way too tight or something, sound mixed in there. And then you get this like lone low synth solo almost in mm-hmm. there. And it's just like really, you know, it just sounds like it's like this haunting melody playing in like an empty room or something. And I don't know. It's just like, it's kind of gorgeous, like this piece. I mean, I think this is like just a perfect example of like a little composition that uses noise to create something like much more than just a sound collage that, you know, you hear a lot of that shit on Bandcamp and stuff, just people slapping a bunch of sounds mm-hmm. together. I mean, this is like a proper composition. You know, I also think that in trying to think like what makes this sound so different from Tri Repete, I mean, we talked about how the, you know, the focus of Tri Repete is really the percussion, right? And here, the focus, I think, is the noise, like the noisiness, but also really pretty melodies. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, I often find, just like on Redick AC, that these tracks, the noisiest ones especially, are working like, you know, they're drawing a huge contrast between like a very pretty melody, lots of layers of melody sometimes, like on Sickly or something, which is like such a gorgeous track. It's like being deliberately contrasted with the noisiest, like most blown out, heavy, I want to say beat, but it's just like slamming like noises and stuff. You know what I mean? It's like, it's all about that contrast, I feel like.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, definitely. You know, I think we talked about that a little bit with Tri Repete and maybe Anvil Vapor a little bit, you know, but I think they're really like just going full blast with it here. And I think when you were talking about like the in Redick AC, like the you know, haunting kind of synth sound that's kind of in the background, and it like really gives it the sound of like a room, which I think like that's one of those things that keeps it away from that digital hellscape thing. It's like there's always like sort of a little bit of a grounding in the real world, like we talked about with Tri Repete, like a lot of it kind of sounds like, you know, maybe it wasn't recorded you know, from an amp, or you know, at least a closely mic'd amp or something, you know, it almost sounds like it's like straight into the computer or straight to tape or something, whereas like I think Chiastic here, like Not always, but at least in some of the layers of these, like, you know, pieces, like, give it space and room and, you know, presence in, like, an actual world, you know, an analog, you know, world, if you will.
Yeah. I think there's, like, a very physical quality to this. I mean, like, to return to Recury, right? There is, like, this kind of scraping, weird noise running through it that sounds like a very physical object or something, you know, like you're just dragging a, you know, I don't know, it's gonna get harder and harder to like compare anything to the real world, but you know what I mean, it sounds like a physical object just being like scraped across some surface or something, and it's quite a, I don't know, small sound, like it feels like small scale. You get a sense of like how big this physical object must be when you're listening to this. It's same thing with like some of these booming, you know, thudding sounds. It's like you know what I mean? You feel like it's a physical object and you can understand it. And then with Recury, as the track goes on, you start to get these like big drone washes, you know, these kind of droney loops like running over the thing. Kind of reminds me of Finesse, his like Mahler remix
album. Yeah.
Which I just adore, but it just sounds like that kind of hugeness is like starts to overwhelm the track, and you all of a sudden the track feels much bigger. Like all the same sounds feel like I'm on a much bigger size, but still in the physical world. I mean, I think that's a huge contrast between the later A, you know, we're totally breaking our rule about not comparing later stuff, but I think it makes it really remarkable and special. Let me hit you with another, some more feedback. This is Robert again. He says, I think Rob and Sean might have been on a big hip hop kick when they made this one. On Sickly, Tew, and Sepater, they delight in throwing out all these jarring drum sounds and rhythms that suddenly snap into a backbeat for a few bars when everything lines up and then collapsing them back into challenging rhythms naturally. Do you hear that? Like, I hear people say that a lot, that it's like a much more hip hop oriented beats on this album.
Yeah, I definitely hear it. The you know, like, how did you say it? Sepater?
Sepater, I have no idea.
Oh yeah, you gave it a little flair. I was saying Sepater. Yeah. sounds bad. You know, on that, I mean, it kind of really starts out like a normal kind of beat. It's almost got like a little krautrocky feel to it.
Yeah, it does. It does.
No surprise, I really love that song. But but you know, like in, and you know, it's got this beat, this, you know, krautrocky beats coming in. It's really sort of like it's really grounded in like, you know, normal music. It almost, even that bass line comes in, it almost like sounds like a real band for a second.
Yeah,
you know,
it kind of does.
Like,
yeah.
You know, it doesn't exactly sound like it, but it sort of reminds me of like pre Audubon Kraftwerk, you know, like when Rother and stuff was still in the band. It reminds me of that a little bit. But then this other like beat comes in, and it like the two, it's in a different you know, time signature or something. I'm not good enough at drums to know, to know really what's going on, but you know, and it's sort of like, it makes it sound like it's getting off, but it's, you know, it just turns into this like polyrhythm, and it like reminds me of like Gears grind, you know, it's like this band is like, you've learned this band is actually, you know, a machine band, and then it's breaking down or something, you know, and it comes back. And I really love that. I love that, like, juxtaposition of these like real, you know, sort of like hip hop rhythms, like almost something you would hear in a club or, you know,
a little funk to it,
but then like, you know, bringing in these you know, crazy polyrhythms and, you know, odd time signatures on top of that, you know.
Yeah, I mean, on that note, you know, I hear the hip hop a lot on Tew, you know, which he mentioned, you know, I hear it even on Recury and stuff. And, you know, I want to ask you, it does have a certain element of, you know, a beats that kind of just ride, you know, like that's what I think of when I think of hip hop, like, and krautrock, honestly, that like the beat just like rides and you shouldn't like fuck with it too much, you know? And, you know, it's interesting because if you think about like Tew, right, there's a lot of stuff on the peripheral space, like the hi-hats and stuff they're really getting tinkered with a lot. You know, which I want to talk about a little bit more in just a second. But, you know, for the most part, it's pretty like repetitive beat. You know, you think about like Sepater transforming a lot in its beat, but a lot of the songs here are pretty repetitive. I mean, this is something we keep like coming to and coming away from as we've been working through the discography is like sometimes they're in a really repetitive mood, sometimes they're not. I mean, what do you make of like some of these tracks that just seem like, you know, like the beat does not change at all for up to 10 minutes, like All Music Complains?
I look at that as a positive. You know, I really like it. I mean, again, it's that sort of krautrock thing. You know, you just ride it and it feels good and it sounds great. It's also that like minimalism kind of thing. I really love like unchanging kind of repetitive music like this. I think they do it very well here, you know, because sure, like the rhythm might be staying the same for 10 minutes, but there's always like something. Yeah. It's not like it's stat, you know, like a 3-bar loop for 10 minutes or something, you know, like none of the songs on here really do that. There's always either something like evolving, devolving, you know, some sort of like machines coming in and going, or, you know, building into this drone. I mean, things like the last track, New Wayne, whatever, like, you know, it's got like that kind of repetitive beat, but then it's just like slowly got this other, you know, kind of sound that's coming in. You know, it almost sounds like I don't know, like a news, you know, old fashioned newswire kind of, you know, like,
yeah, it's got like a modem or something kind of a sound to
yeah
it. And yeah, it's really krautrocky, I think, in that second phase.
Yeah, and it's bringing that sound slowly in until it like really kind of takes over and the beat like basically goes away and that, you know, yeah. And it ends just with this noise. And I think it's like it really kind of transitions like so nicely and stuff that you almost don't notice it's happening for you know, longer than
yeah
than you, I think you should.
Yeah, well, I mean, on that note, so we got another listener email from Darren, who says, if Tri-Rep was them experimenting with new approaches to beat making, Chiastic was them going in new directions with time signatures. Tri-Rep was essentially 4-4 for the most part, but Chiastic Slide really started tripping up the beats. Best example is Sepater, my all-time favorite AE track, hands down. The way the bassline morphs and the beats change time halfway through still gives me chills every time I listen. Totally genius and done so that it's almost imperceptible until the new time signature is complete. This marked the start of their hard to dance to phase, in my opinion. It's also the album where they started using computers as more than just a way to record and arrange. I think this was their first foray into generating audio and MIDI info from Mac's MSP. And the whole album reflected this, like at this point, anything was possible. You know, let me also highlight, you know, I found this 1997 cover story I found in the Wire's archives. I'll share it on our Twitter at GonkastPod, where they talk about feeling burnt out in 95 and finding a breakthrough by incorporating elements of free improvisation into their music. Sean says that they always had tons of loops and stuff on stage, but, quote, couldn't really write our next drum pattern while the present one was running, which is where we want to get. You know, quick side note, if anybody can explain Mac's MSP to us, like in layman's terms, we'd really appreciate it. GonkastPod@gmail.com. I mean, from what I understand, it's like it has an algorithmic, like generative, you know, quality to it where you're like setting parameters and stuff.
Yeah. Like, I downloaded it once and I realized I was not smart enough. I didn't understand it at all.
I mean, my understanding is that, you know, at this point in their career, they are, and probably still, they're doing like a mixture of straight up like composition, you know, like beat by beat, you know, programming manually. They're doing some of that. They're doing a little like playing, you know, actual in real time playing. Mm-hmm. I think you can really hear that on like Sepater. You know, you talk about how it gets quite krautrocky in the second phase there. I mean, it feels like sort of a jam.
Yeah, it really does. Like, yeah.
Those high notes, they're just like those high zithery noises. They're just kind of like jamming it, like a solo or something. You know, and then there's the Mac's MSP element, which I think becomes more prominent as years go on, where they're just saying, you know, stuff like, if this happens, then do this, or, you know, stuff like that. But really, we could use some help. So GonkastPod@gmail.com. But, you know, I hear that on like Tew, like I was mentioning, where it's like, you get these kind of drill and bass type sounds where it's like sometimes the hi-hat is like slowing down, you know, like, and sometimes it's like speeding way up. Sometimes it's like really fast. Sometimes it's, you know, it's constantly changing patterns. I mean, that feels algorithmic to me, right? Like
yeah.
They're setting certain parameters and the thing is just like playing and they're stumbling upon, you know, new interesting arrangements of that. I hear some of those elements that I hear, but what do you make of like the elements of improvisation or transformations, you know, like Darren was saying, on Chiastic Slide.
Yeah, I mean, the transformation, I feel like almost every track, if not every track, you know, off the top of my head, like really does go through like transformations, you know. I mean, like we've been talking, C-Patter, Nuan, like do it so much, you know, they always kind of like either turn into some sort of like noise. Even Redick AC, like, you know, even though it's like this kind of you know, almost static noise, it's transforming in the way these other you know, that like synth we were talking about and everything like comes in the background. I think like as far as improv, you know, I could definitely hear it here, even though like people sort of like complained about this record as being like very repetitive. I think right. It's like a lot of times, and I kind of mentioned this a little bit ago, but it's a lot of times it's like the drum is repetitive, you know, or whatever.
Right.
For the, so, you know, it's like that sort of seems like, okay, we've, you know, preset this, and then, you know, the synths, the other noise, you know, the things around that, you know, change, and, you know, some very often I think seem like sort of improvisational. You know, I mean, I keep bringing it back up, but I mean, I think C-Patter like really has improvisational, you know, elements to it.
I mean, my thing is like, you know, I wonder what you think about this, because it does feel like a lot of these tracks work like the beat feels repetitive because it's kind of just like the structure.
Yeah,
it's like
it's the backbone of it.
Yeah, it sets up the field of play. And then everything else in the middle, I do hear a lot of those elements of like improvisation and like playing with generative software type stuff. You know, but I kind of wonder if like Cepater doesn't sort of change our the way we feel about this album as a whole, like in a misleading way, because Cepater transforms quite radically. You know,
yeah,
it really does.
Yeah.
It shifts like imperceptibly from like a 4/4, honestly very catchy, you know, beat with that like lovely high melody. And then it kind of shifts into like a possibly 3/4, kind of like a waltz thing. I mean, it's like, I don't know, it's a little ambiguous, but it's like the bass line turns into like this walking like waltz beat thing for the second half. And everybody likes to cite this as like, oh, this is where they start getting into like totally transforming songs in the middle. I mean, I do think Nuane transforms quite a lot as well. But, you know, my feeling is that, I don't know, if the album didn't start with Cepater, we might not think of it as like transforming so much, because, you know, like Darren mentions, like play with time signatures. I mean, I don't personally hear a lot of odd time signatures outside of Cepater and Pule, which I can't figure out what the fuck the time signature is there, but you know what I mean? Otherwise it's like pretty, it's almost like pretty solid hip hop beats here.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's right. You know, I didn't sit and try to figure out all the time signatures or everything, but I think you're right. And I think Cepater like gives you maybe a little bit of a false impression, but I mean, I think things definitely change. Like Sickly, you know, it's another one that like goes from being like, you know, real, you know, kind of beat oriented to turning into, you know, sort of a drone, or not really a drone, but just, you know, like a real kind of ambient
I like, mean, it's very pretty and
pretty
melodic,
you know, thing. For, and it's not like it's just, you know, a 20-second outro or something, you know, it's like the last minute of the, so, you know, I mean, it's like a significant portion of the track. So I think everything like definitely, you know, moves and changes around here, but I think you might be right with C-Patter and the time signature thing is kind of giving you a little bit of a false impression.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's, yeah, I've got more to say about that in a second. I do want to highlight before we move on, though, Pule, which I just mentioned, which is like, you know, this is a real strong example of what I think I understand Max MSP to be. You know, it's like, it's got like a real Kalimba kind of sound.
Yeah,
like, you know, it sounds like an update to Yolquin from Amber almost, but it's kind of like this solo like kind of bouncy synth thing, and there's lots of like sort of droney ambient noise like in the far distance, you know, that it actually does get more and more ambient as it goes on, but you can just feel that this is like some kind of loop and they're just like changing parameters in real time.
Yeah,
you know, like, because every once in a while, you know, the thing like totally changes and you'll get like a huge, you know, low note bomb. And it's interesting because, you know, in fitting with like the kind of garage rocky, like lo-fi quality of this album, you know, those are like totally blown out and distorted when it goes too low, which, it, you know, it sounds like it's like playing on a dirty amp, like an old dirty amplifier or something. But that, you know, really, really sounds like that kind of, you know, they're searching for a way to improvise within electronic music, which is no easy feat. And they're discovering it here. And I think that Puel is almost the best example of them discovering, like, how can you keep playing with parameters and stuff in real time? But, you know, to return to what you were just talking about, let me read another listener email here from Tom. He's talking about the, you know, the album art, like the whole aesthetic of this album, the title, the cover, everything. You know, so Tom previously informed us about the meaning of piezo. I can't even remember if I'm pronouncing that right now. But anyway, he says, the best theory I've read is that chiastic means X-shaped. And so the X-shaped slide is the crossfader. Think of its relevance in early hip hop DJing. And we know Sean and Rob were /are B-boys. And if you think about some tracks on chiastic slide, they often fade between two or more stages. Sepater fading between its A and B section almost unrecognizably. Then in Redic AC, the harsh noise cross mixed with the serene string sounds. You know, you were talking about Sickly a minute ago, and I think this is like the perfect example of this, where it does feel like this album is about the crossfader, like crossfading between things. And I hear that on Sepater, in the sense of it does transform between sections in a pretty imperceptible way. But a lot of the tracks here are more, like I said, they set up like that kind of structure. And then Sickly, for example, it's like you mentioned, this booming, blown out, like pretty heavy beat. And then it's almost like they're crossfading in like a beautiful ambient piece with like beautiful string noises and like lots of layers of melody. I mean, it gets like, it gets just like prettier and prettier as it goes on. You know, it's not like, it's not the same as Sepater. It's not transforming from one song to another, but it's like, you know, a crossfader, you could also kind of stop at the middle, right? You could have both tracks playing at the same time. I mean, I feel like a lot of the tracks, like Sickly is like two completely disparate things, like the noisiest, dirtiest thing with the prettiest, you know, ambient piece. You know what I mean? Like a lot of the tracks are like two things that shouldn't fit together laid right on top of each other.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I didn't think of this at all, you know, but I think that, you know, after reading his email, I mean, it's really perfect. You know, look, I looked up what chiastic doesn't really like give a definition, but it's what chiasmic, I think it said. And it does seem, you know, like the whole crossfade thing, I think, is a, you know, really valid a theory as to what the fuck chiastic means. I really like that. I think that's a super good description of the record.
Yeah, I mean, this feels like one of those cases where the record title gives you a little bit of a clue, actually, mm-hmm. and you can actually kind of figure it out. You know, I usually do like a Gabe overthinks things, but I don't feel like I even have to overthink it. Like, it's just there for you, which is like, you know, and it's interesting to think if I'm right about some of my overthinking, then like almost every album so far has been in a meta way about the process of making music, you know, and now this mm-hmm. one is like a tribute to the crossfader. But what I think I would add to that is it's like not just transforming between two things, because I don't think as many tracks do that as we think based on the opening track here. I think it's more of like mixing two things that don't belong together. Like, you know, I mentioned Sickly, you know, I think about like Calbrook, which is another interlude-y type track that I absolutely love, which is like, again, completely blown out, just booming, like weird loops. You know, it's got a very hip hop quality of like, it sounds like a looping, you know, record, like a loop in the old days, the way you'd make a loop. And then like this really lovely kind of synth starts to grow and fade in, you know, and it gets joined by like a really nice sounding like brass type of sound, you know. It's like, again, two things that don't belong together laid on top of each other. I mean, I just feel like I hear that on so many songs here. It's not about switching, it's about mixing, you know.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think you've got a good point there with the, you know, every record so far has almost been about like the making of their music, you know. I think that, you know, you get a little conspiratorial sometimes, but I think yeah. I think that one's you know, in the realm of maybe being correct. It's like how you know, like AC/DC and stuff, all their songs are about rocking.
Right.
Attacker, all theirs are about the b-boy and nerd or whatever.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, I don't know. I just think it's like it's really fascinating because you think about like I don't know. I just think of like every record we've listened to so far is like a really cohesive sound. This one has a really rough, raw around the edges quality, and sometimes I don't even feel like the sounds are mixing together that well, you know, despite how dense it is. And then I started to think, like, maybe that's the point. Like, you're supposed to always think of them as, like, there's an ugliness to this, but there's also a prettiness to this. Mm-hmm. And you hear them kind of, like, collide and then go their separate ways. You know, you mentioned how, like, you get sort of an ambient type of outro to Sickly. And it's, like, that's where it's all pretty. You know, we started all ugly, we end up all pretty, you know, and they kind of cross over each other in the middle. It's, like, always meant to be separate. What about the cover art, which, you know, it depicts... And I'm quoting from the Designers Republic have a website. I didn't even know this till this week, where they, I don't know if it's every album, but they have a little write up about what they were thinking when they were making the album art for Autechre albums. So it depicts reductions of buildings into graphic forms so that the building serves as a random grid to build an abstract graphic, not a representation or an interpretation of the architecture. You know, Envain, for instance, it's the same style. It features Frank Lloyd Wright's Falling Water, which you can kind of make out, but it's just been turned into abstract shapes. You know, the chiastic art apparently consists of shots from like a New York trip that they took, like the Brooklyn Bridge apparently is what we're looking at on the cover here. Not that you could ever figure that out, but also like magazines and stuff that they found on that trip. But I mean, you know, what do you think about like the visual aesthetic of this album?
I will say that this and Draft 730 are my least favorite Autechre album covers. You know, I really love pretty much every other Autechre cover. Like, I think they're honestly some of my favorite, you know, record covers of all time. But yeah, this one, I don't know. I don't really like the colors that are used. It's like a weird... you know, kind of muty gray, purplish thing. I don't know. I don't know how well it like goes with the music. And
yeah, I mean, I was going to ask you honestly about like how would you describe the mood of this record? Because there are several tracks like Nuane, Sepater, honestly, like Two, they have kind of like a dark, menacing, you know, vibe. Mm-hmm. And then I look at this album cover and it's like mostly white, you know, which is a little
yeah,
weird.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's one reason why I don't think it it just doesn't like fit as well, because yeah, you're right. I mean, I think a lot of Autechre's music and a lot of the music here on this record, like yeah, is definitely like darker. I like that Autechre, especially later on, you know, begins to use like monochromatic or, you know, or just grayscale or whatever. Yeah. Which I think, you know, were, I mean, everything from Oversteps until Sign like has no colors in it at all. And I think that just like works so much better with not only their like digital sound and everything and, you know, computer things, but just even the moods of the record. I think Chiastic Slide, the cover here just doesn't mix at all, you know. At least Amber is the other, you know, like colorful album cover, but you know, and we talked about the cover for that one on that episode, so I won't get too into it, but I think it like really sort of fit, you know. We talked about how it's like this, these sort of alien sounds and it's this like alien but still earthly yeah, you know, scenery, and that's how the music, you know, it was like really kind of easy to like explain away the color and everything, and I think we did an okay job at that. But Chiastic, I don't know, it just like really sort of seems it could be anything, you know, like it really like kind of strikes me as an EP cover, you know. It's like an EP level cover.
Honestly, I like the Envain cover more than this one.
Yeah, I agree with that.
There's a little bit more going on there, but yeah, I mean, I just don't know. I don't know what to make of it. I mean, if I wanted to like really overthink it, I could like try to fit it into my theory of like ugly meets pretty, you know, or something like that with this, you know, but I won't try. I think the issue here is that I don't know if we're supposed to know that it's architecture, that we're looking at. You know what I mean? Like, that's just like something you could read about later.
Yeah.
And what you end up with are, yeah, just some abstract shapes, but they're not like very interesting shapes, you know, at least on the cover of Chiastic Slide. To me, it's like, I don't know. I wouldn't spend hours staring at it. Of course, I wouldn't spend hours staring at the Tririptych cover either, but that has something to say, honestly. I feel like it's more fitting. Okay, so we've talked about a bunch of tracks, but I want to move into like maybe some highlights, some lowlights we haven't talked about. First, though, got to quiz you, as always. We've got four bolded tracks on Rate Your Music. You know, if Rate Your Music is anything, tells us anything about consensus, there are four bolded tracks as the highlights here. You know, first off, what do you think is the highest rated track here?
I think, man, this is a hard one, really. But I think maybe Sea Patter or maybe Sickly. God damn it, I don't know. I'm gonna say Sickly.
Damn, you almost had it. It's Sea Patter.
God damn it.
I think that's a big favorite, big crowd favorite. But what do you, you know, any guesses on the other three bolded tracks here?
Oh, the other three? Assume Sickly's not, since you didn't give me that.
Well,
one.
It is. I'll get, okay. I mean, it's all not right. The highest. It's not the highest, but it is one of the
bolded. It's one of the bolded. So Sickly, and then I'm going to say the last track, Nguyen or however the hell.
Yep. Got it.
Good. Yeah. So that's the three.
No, there's one.
Okay. There's four.
Yeah.
Oof. T-Way or the third track.
Yeah. I call it two. I don't know.
Two. But yeah, that works.
Yeah. You got it. You pretty much got it.
Damn.
I wonder, what are your favorite tracks here?
I think I've alluded to it since I've talked to you about it that much, but I really do love Sea Patter. You know, I mean, I've talked about it. I absolutely love krautrock. It's probably honestly my favorite like genre of music and stuff. Mm-hmm. And so like to get, you know, the kind of Ottecker view of that, is really excellent. I love that track. I really love Nguyen, the last track, you know, it's just so massive, and I love how it like turns into that drone and weird. It
reminds me of
end.
You know, like the last two tracks of Amber, like how they get a little doomy and like, mm-hmm. Like extra menacing at the end.
Yeah, yeah. So I think those are my favorite. But what about you?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I love those. Those are like, I think, some of the big highlights here. You know, weirdly, I don't know what's wrong with me, but it's like I just have to say that like I love Redic AC and Calbrook, which I think most people would consider like interlude tracks, but I think they are fascinating because they're like the ugliest sound collage type things mixed with like some of just, it's just so haunting and like, mm-hmm.
I agree with you. I mean, I said it at the beginning. I think that transition from Sepater into Redic AC is like so great, you know. I think it's like one of the best moments you know, on any Ottecker record.
Yeah. And I love the transition from Calbrook into Recury. I think that's like another awesome transition. But yeah, I mean, if you listen to Calbrook and you like, if you just listen to the, you know, musical parts of it, I swear to God, it's like as beautifully composed as like the instrumentals on Pet Sounds or something. But it just so happens to have like the noisiest, boomingest, blown out shit all over it. Like pistons hissing and stuff like that. I mean, it's, I think, just a masterpiece. Let me ask you, what do you think are the, well, there's basically one track that's the lowest rated here. What do you think it is on Rate Your Music?
I think it might either, I'm going to go Pool, P-U-L-E, that one.
Close, but it's Hub, actually.
Oh, okay. All right.
You know, I think we got to talk about that. It's a weird part of this album, which is the fact that, you know, we do have a lot of tracks that I think you could call interlude tracks here. And I've mentioned that I think they're some of the coolest things here. You know, I forget which listener it was, but talking about how just like we're verging on just pure noise. I mean, I think that is like the coolest part about this record. And even the prettiest tracks have a lot of noisiness to them. But a lot of this record, you know what I mean? You could classify it as an interlude, like Redic AC. Hub is long, but it's got a interlude-y, like non-musical quality to the whole thing. Calbrook has an interlude-y quality, maybe just because of the short length. Puel has an interlude-y quality, even though it is like very, very long. What do you make of all that?
I don't know. I don't really think that it's supposed to be an interlude. I mean, maybe Redic AC, it's only 2 minutes. you know, maybe Calbrook because it's only, you know, right under 4 minutes. But I don't think Hub is supposed to be an interlude-y kind of thing. I mean, especially it being, you know, back to back with Calbrook. Definitely like, I get why you would say that, you know, it sort of has like that kind of quality to it. I think it's like the most unchanging maybe song on here, but perhaps. But it's also, I think it, and maybe this is kind of an interlude-y thing, but I think it's sort of a nice little breather. You know, for the record, you know,
I mean, it's a long breather.
It's a long breather, but I think it like kind of, I think it's perfectly placed. You know, I mean, it's basically right in the middle, and I think it's like just really sort of it's a track that is so like I think minimalist and repetitive that it doesn't require like I don't want to say it doesn't require like deep listening or something, but like it just doesn't like. It's not so full of sound and like noise and everything that you have to like dig to hear everything. I think much more like, you know, laid out. You can kind of relax, take it in. It's a much easier thing to swallow than a lot of the other songs here, I think.
Yeah, so. It's not so dense, you know, and it's interesting how they do kind of give you those breathers because like Tew is not such a dense, you know, arrangement. Mm-hmm. It's quite spacious actually. And, you know, we didn't mention that, but I do love that song. The first Autechre song I ever heard. love it. It's like, you know, I love the like bass drones in that. It's got kind of like a buzzing noisiness to it. It sounds like a, you know, like a, I don't know, a dirty amp or something like that. But there's some space there. There's some space on Hub, like you mentioned, and there's a lot of space on Puel. In contrast to all the other songs, which I think are so dense for the most part, like they're just so claustrophobic to me. But yeah, I mean, Hub is a weird one because it's like these, you know, just off time thuds. You know what I mean? And like, it's not just the bass that does that. It's like several things that are like just completely off time, just some weird loop. You know, it's got a really, I think, lovely, kind of a similar vibe that I like in Redic AC, in that it's got like a cello type sound, just like on its own in an empty room, kind of like joining. Yeah. But I mean, of all the tracks, you know, in my theory of the power of the crossfader here, I mean, Hub is like the true power of the crossfader because it's like several things that have nothing to do with each other as if they're all just on top of each other. You know, you even get like a weird kind of like way in the distance, like a circus organ running or something. It sounds like totally field recording something, but yeah, just a bunch of disparate parts that have nothing to do with each other. Are there any songs that you just really don't like here?
No, honestly, I don't think I would really change anything about the record. There's no song on here that I want to skip or anything. I mean, it seems like a cop out, but I really don't have like a disliked song or anything.
Do you have no temptation to say the Puel goes on too long?
I mean, if I have to come up with a complaint, that's one you could file, I guess. But I don't particularly mind it. To be honest.
Yeah, I don't know. For some reason, I feel like this record flies by. Like,
it doesn't feel like 70 minutes. Like, honestly, it feels like one of the shorter Autechre albums, which I guess it kind of is when some of them are 8 hours long.
Yeah, well, yeah, I mean, but even the ones we've talked about, I guess it is probably the shortest by, you know, 2-3 minutes, but it feels like much faster to me. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's like about the way it's structured where you keep getting these like kind of short little, you know, blitzes of noise and stuff that are just they're not like interludes in the sense of less effort has been put into them composition wise, but they are interludes in the sense that they do give you like a break or like a change up or something. And I always think of like, you know, by the time you get to Recury, Puel, Nuane, that's the first time you got like three juggernauts in a row. But you're like almost done, it feels like. You know what I mean? Like every time Recury starts, I'm like, oh, I'm about at the end here. Even though I'm like,
yeah, you still have like, you still have 30 minutes. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. But I don't know. Just feels like it goes.
No, it really does. I mean, I feel like every time I listen to this record, I would put it on and, you know, it'd be over. And I would think like, oh, you know, should I listen to that again? I'd be like, oh, goddamn, it's lunchtime, you know, like
yeah, right,
way more time like went by than I felt like.
Yeah, so I don't know if we have much to add. I mean, you know, kind of wanted to ask you about the sequencing and the cohesion here, but we've kind of already talked about it. I mean, I do think it flies by. I think it's like it's organized like in a really smart way. And I, you know, we've talked about those transitions, which there are a lot of them on here that just make like the perfect, I don't know, perfect flows. It was interesting because I tried listening to this record on shuffle just like out of curiosity one time, and you know, it just like, it just doesn't work at all. It's like, it's got to go into the thing that it's designed to go into. Yeah. Anything to add about the sequencing here?
No, I think I covered it pretty well. I mean, I think one of Odd Tucker's strong points is like a sequencing of a record, and here is completely perfect.
Yeah. I guess I'll add real quick that it is quite a cohesive record, not just because it's all got that noisy, pretty, you know, dichotomy going on, but also there are a lot of like the similar sounds you hear popping up. You know, there's kind of like a zither kind of thing on Sepater, and you hear that pop up again on like Sickly and stuff. You know, you hear some of these like I said, those like kind of low cello-y sounds on Reddick. They pop up again on Hub, you know, like
it really sounds like they're using, and I think this is maybe the first record where they do it. You know, like I've read stuff about like for each record, you know, they make like sort of a rig of, you know, digital and I'm sure sometimes, you know, analog equipment, and you know, they make the record from that. And that's what the sound, it's like they've created their own sounds, but it's like everything in this world is like made from those, you know, colors or whatever.
Yeah, I just find myself like remarking on like, okay, so Pater's got like a pretty dirty booming, you know, beat, and then Sickly has that same kind of quality. Mm-hmm. Calbrick has that same quality, you know, Nuane has that same quality. It's like, I don't know, it feels like each song introduces a couple new sounds to this world, but it keeps building on the same kind of sound world, like you're saying. Okay, I want to zoom out a little bit and talk about the context of this record. You know, we talked about Björk's Post last episode as an example of Warp's growing influence on, you know, the wider music world, but Björk's Homogenic comes out this year, 1997, and I think that's where like Odd Tucker's influence really, really starts to shine. You know, I think like All Neon Like almost uses the same, like, I don't know, the same like kind of dirty organ buzzy sound from Letterell from Tri Repete, for example. But let me also, I think it's a bigger issue. I want to highlight a few classic electronic releases from 1996 and 1997, which includes Aphex Twin's Richard D. James album, Square Pusher's Hard Normal Daddy, you know, Music, Mike Paradinas's Lunatic Harness, and Luke Vibert's As Plug, Drum and Bass for Papa. You know, very interestingly, the Wire cover story I alluded to earlier mentioned some of these releases, to which Sean replies, quote, "I think there's not enough emotion in music at the moment. There's a lot of people our age who are making music that I think is absolutely stunning technically, except for the fact that the emotion's somehow lost in the process. A lot of people are getting on a complex tip, but I think they've kind of forgotten where it all came from. It's that scientific approach. It's knowing you can do things, and that knowledge that you're capable of producing certain results is actually really negative because it makes you forget that you have to discover things still." Isn't that fucking nuts? Because of all these artists, who gets accused of being emotionless than Odd Tucker? I mean, do you hear that? You know, when you think about some of those releases from this year and the year previous, that this is more emotional or something?
No, not really. I mean, it really is kind of a odd, you know, statement because you're right. I mean, people like, I think the complaint you hear most about Odd Tucker, especially from people who don't enjoy the band, is that it is emotionless and robotic and, you know, lacking humanity and everything. I don't know that I could say I've heard that much about, you know, some of those other records. It's been so long since I've listened to really all of those.
I mean, you think about like the Richard D. James album, right? It does have kind of that like technical fireworks, you know. He's like,
yeah,
fully,
yeah, that, yeah, I think that's the you know, the obvious one with the
I mean, he's left like the analog, you know, world behind, and he's fully into digital drum programming. And you know, it's interesting because you hear a little bit, I think, of that in like, you know, two, like I was mentioning how there's that kind of like algorithmic, like kind of speed up, slow down of the drums, like kind of a drill and bass quality to that. You hear a little bit of that kind of play on this album, but it does feel like they are resisting making the digital jump, which they will make. But that, like in 1997, they're the last ones making pretty analog sounding music, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it is strange. But I mean, I, you know, people's feelings can change, their ideas can change, you know. You know, just because he said it one time in a you know interview.
I just feel like in this album, you know, there's a lot of really pretty stuff, and it's always that contrast between the ugly and the pretty, like I was saying. But it's, you know, I do think that there's some feeling here, mm-hmm. and it does feel like a little bit of a resistance to, let's just see how far we can push software, you know, like a lot of these artists, I love these records, by the way, but it's like, they were really just, they almost sound satirical. You know what I mean? Like when you listen to the opening track on Richard D. James' album, it's like what he's doing with that snare is almost like just to say, can you fucking believe what I'm doing with this snare? You know what I mean? It's
there's
a playfulness to it. It does feel a little bit more serious, a little bit more artistic. And I don't know, it's something to bookmark, and then we'll probably return to it as they do jump into the digital world. So let's just sum up on Chiastic Slide. You know, you said you didn't spend a ton of time with this in your life. So how did it go these past 2 weeks?
You know, it went great. I really fell in love with this record. Like I was like regretting that I've never made this one that I've you know sat with over and over. You know, like a lot of times, you know, we take 2 weeks in between these shows and our other podcasts, we do the same thing with records, and like oftentimes I'll listen to it so much that like as we get closer to recording, I'm like, oh man, you know, I still have to listen to, you know, like even if it's a record I love, I've just have literally listened to it so many times that I'm getting a little tired of it. Here, yeah. I was like I, you know, popping it on every day when I got started at work and stuff. And like, I mean, so much so that I had to even be like, oh, don't forget about those EP, you know, gotta get to the EP, you know, don't you know, neglect them at all. I really fell in love with it. Like I was having, you know, moments of, you know, do I like this more than Tri Repete and stuff?
Yeah, I was too.
I was like, I don't know. I mean, we'll see, you know, we got our lists, right, so I won't spoil anything, but I mean, I definitely had the itch, and I was just, you know, I always kind of like when we do these, I sometimes think like I'm listening to it and I'm like, is this my favorite Autechre record? And I'm like, maybe it's just because I've only listened to this album for 2 weeks, you know, straight.
Right,
you know, out of pure repetition. But I definitely, you know, was having those thoughts here.
Yeah, I got to say the same. I mean, yeah, this was not something I'd ever spent so much focused time just listening to. And I think it's like a masterpiece, honestly. I mean, I just think it's fascinating. It's like raw, gritty. I mean, something just kind of like Tri Repete and honestly Amber and Incunabula, that they did it this one time and they haven't done it again, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's like, makes it just kind of a special, interesting, like, I don't know. It almost feels like it's in the realm of, you know, a lot of artists do this where it's like they follow up their big breakout masterpiece that's got this perfection quality with like something raw, something difficult, you know, something like really pushing themselves. You know, you get like your Weezer Pinkerton or your Nirvana In Utero, you know, and or Yeezus, you know, like I mentioned earlier. And it's like, I don't know, this has that like punk energy to it, and it's just absolutely fascinating. I mean, I love every part of it. I had a hard time stopping listening to it. So do you think, you know, this is just as good as the rest of their 90s work? I mean, you know, I said earlier that I feel like it's kind of just growing and growing in stature as the years go on. And I seriously predict that by the time we get to the 25th anniversary write-ups, people are going to be like, you know, just as good as Amber, just as good as Tri Repete, maybe even. I mean, what do you think?
I think it definitely deserves it, you know? I mean, like I said, I feel like I was one of those people who kind of, I had listened to this, but it was always like a record I only put on when I was, you know, going through Autechre kind of things. And mm-hmm. like, honestly, if you had asked me, you know, and I think I did have it on my like Rate Your Music as like a 4, you know, like a, you know, I always thought it was a good record, but I always thought it was kind of, you know, a little bit of a step down from Tri Repete, and just, you know, sort of one of those like kind of, hidden gems in between the classics, you know. I mean, LP5, you know, it being you mentioned bookend between Tri Repete and LP5, you know, two of their highest rated, if not the highest rated of theirs, you know, on Rate Your Music.
Right.
It kind of got lost in that shuffle for me, and I feel like that's happening with, if it's happening to me, I'm sure it's happening to a lot of people. So I really do hope, I mean, I know they reissued Incunabula Amber and Trirepite a few years back, you know, on vinyl and everything. They haven't done Chiastic or I think anything later than that. I mean, it'd be nice to get some sort of, you know, even just a reissue on vinyl or something to kind of bring it back into the
get that reappraisal going.
Yeah, I think that'll like, you know, kind of force people to spend some extra time with it and publications, you know, to maybe review it again and rethink it. I think it 100% deserves that like sort of relook.
Well, I mean, on that note, do you understand though why it was so divisive in the first place? Like what is All Music talking about when they really shit on it?
I guess like I think I would understand it in 1997. You know, like you know, it's got that curse of like following up like a classic record. I mean, because you know, like one of the things you mentioned, Yeezus. You know, My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy is like such a universally acclaimed record, and then Yeezus, like it kind of has that divisive fan base. You know, a lot of people, you know, myself included, think it's another masterpiece. They love it, and then there's a lot of people who like absolutely hate that record. You know,
right.
And I feel like Chiastic is like that. I mean, it's just really the curse of having like a classic record is the follow up. It's so hard to like to follow that up.
Because if you wanted more Trirepite, like I'm sure a lot of people did,
exactly, you're gonna be disappointed. And especially, you know, with something like Trirepite, I'm sure a lot of people heard that record that aren't Autechre fans and didn't realize they weren't gonna get Trirepite too, you know.
Yeah, that's true.
And I think that, you know, leads to even more disappointment with those kind of, you know, people. And yeah, I mean, it seems like All Music is maybe running through that. All Music, you know, I didn't read the whole review, but you know, your little snippets or whatever you cut out for me, they just seem to have like a problem with like the repetitiveness and stuff. And I feel like that's like, I don't know who wrote the review, but that's sort of not understanding the genre.
Yeah.
You know, like that's complaining, you know, listening to Philip Glass and complaining that he's playing the same notes too many times. You know,
yeah,
it's like
that's true.
That's what you're getting here. You know, like, you know, this hamburger's got too much meat on it. You know, it's like, right. Then don't order the fucking hamburger. You know, like,
yeah. And I feel like it's like a cursory listen because it's in the details where all the like
exactly
lots of variation is. But all right, we ready to move on to Envain?
Sure. A month before Chiastic Slide on January 27th, 1997, Autechre released their fifth EP, Envain. Some fans believe that the tracks here started as remixes of Nuane from Chiastic Slide, and Sean sort of hints at this in a 1997 interview saying, we all started off with the same part and developed it in four different ways, but they ended up being completely different tracks. It's almost like they were just different tracks, but because they started from the same basis, we thought, well, fuck it, we'll call them remixes. When asked about this in a 2013 AMA, though, Sean say it's slightly true, and Rob said no. So make of that of what you will.
I love that they're like doing the AMA separately and just gave two completely
different answers. Yeah.
You know, I don't think that, you know, obviously didn't kill the rumors anyway. In regard to reception, the Envain EP is quite well liked. It's got a respectable 3.50 on Rager Music. And even AllMusic, who seems to, like I said, hate this era of Autechre, admits it's, quote, an awfully interesting sidestep that nevertheless makes Chiastic Slide all the more disappointing. Was the Envain EP new to you?
Again, you know, it's one that I'll listen to in that box set, which I feel like we're going to say with all the EPs.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's not really one I frequently put on its own.
Yeah, I've never spent any serious time with this, honestly. I mean, I listen to that box set a lot, but I have never thought about this EP much at all. So I'm sure I've heard the tracks, but just never, ever focused on it. So I'll just say it was new to me for the most part. So how would you describe the overall sound of Envain?
You know, I don't know. It's I think it's hard for me to describe it. You know, it's kind of got like that chiastic slide feel. You know, like I can see why that rumor or whatever about the remix of New Wayne like comes through. But it's also got some, you know, odder things, like the you know, there's a vocal sample in the first song, like Gaz Quarter, which like feels like really kind of not a chiastic slide move, even though I think I think it's Pool or whatever, there's that like very slight, it almost sounds like somebody saying like a punch noise or something, like
I think that's on got on Wreck Your Ear, there's like a weird and then also on got another track Calbrick, maybe there's something like a vocal, but yeah, I mean it's scratching sample of exactly. Dr. Octagon, and the track is like a almost straightforward hip-hop track. It's like a very like, it's like a hip-hop beat, you know, and they talk about, you know, I've read in interviews that it's almost like in their spare time they occasionally make just straight up hip-hop beats, and they don't really release them because they don't think they're interesting enough, but it's like this feels like one that they liked enough and spent enough time on. But it's a straight up like hip-hop beat. I mean, I think it would have been like wildly out of place on Chiastic Slide despite sounding like the textures are somewhere in the same world. But you know, you're right, it's hard to describe the overall sound because I think these are four pretty different sound worlds. Straight up hip-hop track, you know, you've got like Latent Quarter, which is like kind of sputtering, weird, glitchy noises, kind of in an extremely chiastic way, and yet then it kind of builds into a pretty bouncy hip, you know, kind of hip-hop-ish, but like kind of a weird, I don't know, stuttery, bouncy like beat. Laughing Quarter is, you know, again kind of like an upbeat, I don't know, it's got kind of like a fluid climbing quality to it, but yeah, kind of like upbeat and fun. I don't know if I would describe much of Chiastic Slide as fun, but that's kind of like a fun track. You know, Drawn Quarter is like totally different with like something like maybe a krautrockish quality. But you know, my feeling here is that it sounds like, I don't know about New Wayne, but it sounds like remixing material from the Chiastic Slide sessions, because there is that deep bass that I said I don't hear anywhere on Chiastic Slide is all over this. You know what I mean? Like really deep, booming bass. You know, and it just, there's something about the mix that is more spacious, like a little cleaner. And so it's almost like those crunchy, gritty noises, those dirty noises on Chiastic Slide are like just adding texture, you know what I mean, to like more straightforward beat type compositions.
Yeah, definitely. Like it sounds like the you know, the instruments of Sickly Sweet or Chiastic Slide.
Yeah.
But yeah, you're right. You know, like the mixing is different. Whereas on Sickly Sweet, or God damn, why do I keep saying that? Chiastic Slide, you know, those crunch noises and everything are like, I think they're so like center. You know, like the center of the record. And here, you know, they're relegated to like different. To, you know, more in the back of it, you know, like while they kind of exist, you know, there's some dirtiness in some of the tracks. You know, the second one, Latent Quarter, you know, has it the most obviously, I think, but it's a much like cleaner kind of way of presenting it. It's almost like a bridge between Trirepitae and Chiastic Slide, like in a mixing kind of realm.
Yeah, it kind of is. I mean, you know, when I think about Latent Quarter, it is like it starts off for the first like 2 minutes, I feel like we're in firmly chiastic territory, but then yeah, you get a much bigger bass sound. Mm-hmm. It's got like kind of a blown out quality, but there's also like really deep, like subterranean low end, that I don't know. It gives you something to like center on. It like ties the whole thing together, you know, very similar on Laughing Quarter, which, you know, is a little dirty, a little glitchy. It's got like Anvil Vapor style to it almost, and it's like slamming up equality, but I don't know, it's got like a smooth riding, like, you know, big booming low end kind of thing where you could just have this on in the background. I mean, it's weird because we complained about how Anvil Vapor was like a simplified Trirepitae in a way, a more accessible Trirepitae. This feels quite accessible. There are parts of like Gaz Quarter and even Drawn Quarter that make me think of Boards of Canada a lot, because you know how they are like very hip hop, and it's got like kind of a it's got, you know, some of that like beauty, some of that like sweetness on here, and you know, just nice riding beats and stuff. And it's like, I don't know, but I wouldn't complain that it's like, because it's not a simplified chiastic slide to me. It's just like something a little simpler, a little bit, they're in like a more straightforward mood, but it's not a dumbed down version of the chiastic slide sound. Would you disagree with that?
No, I think that's perfect. You know, like, yeah, Anvil Vapor, I that was our, you know, chief complaint. And I think like that's a reason I like this EP more than that one and everything, because you're right. It doesn't just, while it's using like similar, you know, palette of sick, God, yeah. I almost did it again. Chiastic slide. It's because I have my list open and the word sickly sweet is in front of me. I'm going to change windows here. You know, it's got like the same sort of like instruments, you know, like it's maybe the same rig, you know, that we talked about kind of thing, but it doesn't just feel like, you know, a different, you know, a dumbed down version of it. I mean, I think like Cos Quarter, like you said, like they, you know, that's such like a hip hop thing. It like really does kind of feel like one of these, you know, things they've talked about, like just making in their, you know, free time or whatever. That was good enough to like release. I mean, I feel like the, you know, those DJ scratches and the vocal sample and stuff, like it's just so far like really removed from Chiastic Slide that it really sort of like boosts this EP in the sense that you know, it's not just like you're listening. It's not like you're just listening to four leftover tracks, you know, that weren't good enough to make that. You know, it like really, it's like, I think really none of the tracks here like belong on Chiastic, and so,
yeah,
you know, but they're still like good songs, you know, that they're interesting enough to put out and everything.
Yeah, just like four things that didn't belong and made up their own kind of like unique little, slightly more straightforward, slightly more like riding. You know, there's not like the play with time signatures.
No,
not much of the play with like the generative like algorithmic type stuff, I don't think, but yeah, it's just like unique and interesting. You know, moving on to like our favorite tracks or our worst favorite tracks. What do you think is the highest? There's one bolded track here. What do you think it is?
Probably Gauze Quarter.
Surprisingly, it is Laughing Quarter.
Oh, yeah, that is kind of surprising.
That really does surprise me. I mean, I wonder what your highlights are, but we got to, you know, I think I read already from listener Robert, his email, but you know, he mentioned that Gauze Quarter for him is an all-time jam. we should acknowledge that scratching sample, you know, it comes from Dr. Octagon, his Dr. Octagonicologist album, where he's saying jam like a Tekker, which, you know, is like a Tech Nine or something, but it sounds like Autechre. But some people actually believe that he's saying jam like Autechre. I think they probably just sampled it, you know, because it sounds like Autechre, and they thought it would be kind of funny, but, you know, could be that he's a, you know, that would be fun to believe that Dr. Octagon liked, you know, liked Autechre at that time. But is Gauze Quarter a highlight for you, or what is?
Yeah, I mean, when there's only four tracks, you know, it's a little hard to pick a highlight, but I really do like Gauze Quarter. It's one of those kind of things, like, you know, on paper, and when you describe it,
right,
I feel like I'm not gonna like it. I mean, I've bitched about the vocal samples, you know, in the earlier Autechre work, and I mean, DJ scratching is like a thing that did not hold up well for indie music. But I don't know. There's something about like the way it's used here. It's really interesting, and I like kind of dig it, you know. So I think I would put Gauze Quarter as a highlight. I like Laughing Quarter a lot. You know, I mean, it's probably the most like experimental, you know,
yeah,
track here.
True.
So, you know, up my alley. But you know, with only four tracks, it's difficult to single out, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I like every track here a lot. I think that Gauze Quarter, you know, might be my favorite. It's actually a lot of, like, almost every track on here, it's like it starts and I'm like not that inspired, and then by the time it gets like going, I'm like, damn, this is great.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and like,
yeah,
Gauze Quarter, I'm a little bit like, oh, we're doing like a normal hip-hop thing, and then it just keeps like growing and growing, like with these, again, like really pretty synth lines. You know, it kind of like just becomes like kind of a just beautiful ambient piece, like layered on top of this beat in a similar way almost to Chiastic Slide. And yet there's just nothing dirty or ugly about this whole track. You know, it just rides. It's just so smooth. That bass sound, it's like so warm and classic feeling. And it just builds over the course of 10 minutes, like continually builds. Honestly, I think a lot of the tracks here have a tri-repete type structure where they just keep growing and unfurling. And like by the end, there's so much melody. There's like so many layers. You know, it never feels dense and claustrophobic like Chiastic, but it's like just really full and like composed. And I just think, I don't know, it's just awesome. Drawn Quarter, you know, I got to highlight this, like another bizarre sound, like scraping or something, like click clacking, like I don't even know what to compare it to, but it sounds like a real world object or something. And I don't know, it has like a nice krautrock kind of jam feel to it, but it's just a little bit more straightforward, a little bit more like, I don't know, immediately engaging. Nice melody on it as well. Is there anything you didn't like here?
I think like something you just said, you know, like you feel like at first, like it's kind of going to be boring or, you know, or less enjoyable. But, you know, whenever I would, you know, I said like I had a hard time like taking Chiastic Slide off and listening to the EPs. And every time I sort of would start this one, I'd be like, you know, this. But then, yeah, by the time you're in it, it's like, oh, yeah, wait. Like this whole record is like pretty fucking good too, you know?
I mean, it's just like it's for like knockouts to me.
Yeah,
honestly.
Yeah,
but
definitely. Yeah.
The question is like I don't know if they like really belong together that much. It's like I agree that they are unified by not fitting on Chiastic, but I don't know about the rest of it. You know, it's like, what do you make of like, is there any kind of flow here? I think it's worth noting that this is kind of like the end of this brief little period in Autech or EPs where like all of the tracks have some similar name thing, you know, like mix or second, you know, or like this one is quarter, you know. It's like, it's weird because the EPs where they do that, they almost seem to be acknowledging that they have nothing to do with each other. They just represent some space on the album or something like that. Right. But what do you make of like the flow of this as an EP?
Well, I think, you know, when this came out, you know, on vinyl, it's like each one of these songs is its own side. And I think that maybe, you know, we're losing that a little bit in the digital age. I think it works a bit better, you know, probably on. I don't own this. It's very expensive or a little expensive. You know, I think it works a little better because then, you know, when you just have like one song on a side, you've got to flip, you know, you're flipping in between each one. You're not really like expecting it to flow, you know. You're like, it really does become like an EP, I think. Because when you listen to it, you know, digitally in order, you know, back to back, I think you're right, you know, that it doesn't have like, you know, such a great flow or, you know, everything, like, you know, it's not super recognizable that they all like belong together or anything.
I think it's okay. They belong together because they are a little more straightforward maybe as a whole. Honestly, I was gonna say, like, if you love Boards of Canada and you haven't gotten into Autech, you could start here, honestly. It might do it for you. And you know, I'll even say that like my Autech hating girlfriend, I don't know why, but she really likes Leighton Quarter, and actually
weird,
this whole EP she doesn't mind, but for some reason that song she likes the most. But you know, so I feel like it could be a good starting point for people. You know, wrapping up here, what were your overall impressions? I mean, do you love this?
I wouldn't say I love it, but I think it's one of the better EPs that we've gotten to so far. You know, I like it a lot. I don't love it. It's not as good as a Chiastic or anything, but I think it's one of the better EPs, you know, so far that we've hit.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I guess if my only hang up is that it doesn't really hang together that well, I'll forgive them because of what you mentioned about it. Just each one is like its own side and, you know, it's kind of just its own experience. But
I think it was actually even sold as two separate, like the... Like you had to buy two different things, you know. I don't think it was a double album.
I think they did that with Anvil Vapor as well, actually. But yeah, I mean, you know, that aside, I think it's every song here is awesome. Like I said, everyone, it like starts off, I'm like, all right, and then as it gets into it, I'm like in love with it. I don't know, it might just be because it was like pretty much completely new to me, but I was just feeling like this is fantastic. I mean, it's like you know, it would be my favorite EP so far. I think like the quality and the uniqueness of the EPs, it's really starting to shine here. And I know that's going to be a trademark of Artecker moving forward, but you know, I would say I was delighted, delightfully surprised by this thing. Are we ready to move on to Sickly Sweet?
Sure. Last episode, we asked you if Sickly Sweet was an essential release that we should cover, and the answer was a resounding yes. Listener Darren, for instance, said you guys were wondering if you should include it. Hard yes, dudes. That's an absolute killer EP. Tilapia is a beast, and the less dense, crunchy, laser-precise sounds are a precursor to their approach on LP5. Similarly, listener Chris said, without a doubt, the answer is yes. When grouped with Chiastic and In Vain, it rounds out a really clear phase in the catalog. So here it goes. Artecker released Sickly Sweet on August 26th, 1997, and in this case, the remix theories are totally true. All five tracks apparently started as remixes, or mechanical reclamations, as the cover puts it, of Sickly from Chiastic Slide, but ended up sounding almost nothing like it at all.
Yeah, and in regard to reception, most fans seem to agree with Darren that it's a pretty special turning point for the duo. Despite a merely respectable 3.52 rating on Rate Your Music, AllMusic, on the other hand, loathes this release. They gave it 2.5 stars out of 5 and said, listeners can practically feel the humanity slipping away with each track, adding, Warp Records, perhaps in their wisdom, signed the band Boards of Canada the very next year and gave any disheartened Artecker fans a taste of what they could have done if they had stayed human. Damn. That is brutal. So was Sickly Sweet relatively new to you?
It was more new than In Vain. You know, again, from the box set and stuff, but Sickly Sweet is really kind of one I've even more rarely put on its own or anything.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat, because I really thought that it was just remixes of Sickly, and I just never cared to check it out.
Yeah, I think sort of the same thing for me too. Will you want to describe the overall sound? I made you do it. See that?
I don't usually have to start. I mean, yeah, I totally agree that this is like, you know, and I don't like to describe things this way when we're talking about a new release, but it sounds like we're transitioning into the LP5 sound. I mean, it is much more digital, I think. It is much more of that, like, algorithmic, like, generative composition. You know, you listen to the first two tracks here, like Yeezland and Pencha. You know, it's, like, such complex, you know, I don't know, just array of constantly shifting sounds. You know, it's something that, like, you couldn't compose alone. You know, it's something you kind of stumble upon as you're playing with parameters and generative software and stuff. And a lot of the tracks, a lot of the sounds here have, like, kind of a clean, high-def, like, digital quality to them. You know, despite maybe you can hear a little bit of the crunch here and there from, you know, just maybe it's like if they took some of the little pieces from the Chiastic era and just reassembled them in a totally digital format or something. You know, but it's just like, I don't know, really complex compositions. I think about, like, you know, Sepater from Chiastic Slide, the way it transforms, it sounds quite effortful. You know, it was like, it must have been, I don't know, it sounds like labored over, like, how do we make this change imperceptibly, you know, and just evolve into something new. And it's quite a feat that they pull off here. You know, on Yeezland, first track, the thing changes like 4 times, you know, in the course of just a few minutes. And it's like, I don't know, just in the digital programming world, you can change things like completely. Pencha, the beat keeps like falling apart and just reassembling in a completely different shape. It's like, you know what I mean? It's like not something you could do previously with the previous like hardware they were using.
Yeah.
It just feels like a bold jump fully into all the possibilities of this new world.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. You know, it definitely, like, whereas Chiastic and stuff, I mean, In Vain is, like, I think clearly, like, the bridge between Tri-Repute and Chiastic, and Chiastic, or Sickly Sweet is the bridge between Chiastic and LP5, you know?
Yeah, I agree.
I mean, so many of the sounds we're getting here, I feel like you just really couldn't get, you know, from just solely, you know, hardware, you know, equipment. You're right, like, you need this, like, software element and, you know, this generative, you know, kind of algorithmic, you know, approach to making music. So, yeah, I mean, I completely agree with you.
Yeah, and it's just like the high def quality of the sounds here. Mm-hmm. You know, we're not in the garage anymore.
No,
like we're not
no,
making
exactly.
garage rock here.
No.
I mean, it's so like crisp, so clear, so clean, like such clean mm-hmm. sounds. You know, and what it does is I think it adds an element of, I don't know, just like elegance to all these tracks here. Like they're very, I don't know, graceful. It feels like ballet we're listening to or something. You know, I jotted down, it feels like a mixture of like I'm listening to geometry in ballet form or something. I mean, it just feels like, yeah, just so, I mean, like these abstract shapes and change, you know, again, just constantly shifting. You know, the track like Karachi or whatever. I don't know. It's what will become, I think, a classic Autechre thing, at least in my opinion, in the sense of like, it's kind of a beautiful lullaby. It's like a very simple, like pretty, just gorgeous thing, but it's been like broken into pieces and then reassembled in a strange way. You know,
yeah.
there's like that weird extra beat in every, you know, it's like in 9/8 time or something. And there's all these like weird lasers and stuff like going around your head and like just strange noises. A lot of that like speeding up, slowing down of like snare rolls and hi-hat fills and stuff that you get on, you know, we were talking about like the Richard D. James album that you get all over that album. You know, you hear a lot of that here, but I don't know. It sounds like, I was trying to write down like analogies, like if you smashed a snow globe or something and then put it back together, like that's what this track sounds like. Cause it's like beautiful, honestly. You know, or like if you, I don't know, you downloaded a torrent and it broke, you know, broke the torrent into all different pieces and then didn't put it back together in the right way. Like,
yeah,
that's what you're listening to. But you can hear like kind of the prettiness in there. And then I think it's so smart. The track 4, Crib, is like the most straightforward, just prettiest lullaby of a track that I think Autechre has ever made. And it just makes you like, you know, it gives you like that little hint, like, hey, go searching through some of these other more difficult tracks and you'll find all this prettiness in there, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's a good point. I think the, you know, we talked about the album cover for Chiastic, and stuff. And, you know, I said, it's my least favorite. I think you said you like this one a little more. And I agree.
Yeah.
I think like this cover fits the sound
It does.
You know, it kind of reminds me of the, you remember like having a screensaver, you know,
yeah,
like that
yeah,
weird color one that would bounce and change. It like looks like that. And I mean, this is computer music. And especially, mm-hmm. you know, I feel like that, 1997 was around the time, you know, you were using that screensaver too. So,
it's true.
You know, I think it like fits, much better. I guess quickly I'll say that I think In Veins is just looks like, you know, leftover from Chiastic Slides.
Yeah. Well, that's the one I was saying that is actually, it's, the Frank Lloyd Wright building. And I do kind of actually like that one even more than the Chiastic Slide one, but it's the same concept. And yeah, maybe it's not super mm-hmm. inspiring, but this one, yeah, this one's very fitting because it's
yeah, I think
digitally generated like strange geometrical pattern or something.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's very representative of the music on this record.
Yeah, I mean, so on that note, it's like, what do you think about all music's complaints? That, like we're leaving humanity here. I mean, this is like a common complaint with later Autechre, and maybe we're shifting into that era here, but. You know, I just don't really get it. I feel like maybe they stopped at Pencha, because if you just listen to the first two tracks, you might think that like, oh, this is just crazy discombobulated noise. I mean, it's very disorienting, these first two tracks, but the last three tracks are like just straight up gorgeous, honestly. And then, like I said, I listened to Crib. I'm like, wow, this is fantastic. And then it made me like go back and listen a little closer to Yeezland and Pencha and to hear all that, like, all those, you know, they're abstract, but they're like pretty lovely melodies, like woven into this complex digital fabric, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it reeks of, you know, like just a cursory listen kind of thing.
Yeah.
You know, like you said, you know, you Autechre is kind of work, you know, you've got to like, rarely do you listen to an Autechre record and you know, from the first time or the first couple times, do you get everything and see all the secrets, you know, it really requires like deep listening. You know, we've been talking since the beginning, you know, with the whole artificial intelligence, you know, series and everything. So it just really doesn't read like they, you know, did that. And also why is that a negative thing, like leaving humanity behind?
That's true.
If you want to, you know, a humane kind of record, you don't listen to a rock band, you know, like I don't.
Yeah.
It's again, like I said before, it's like ordering the hamburger and complaining that, you know, it's got meat on it. It's just what you ordered, you know. I don't get that with electronic music, you know.
But if you were around in 1997, I mean, I guess
it would make
pretty,
more sense then, but
be a pretty big jump, I think. You know, you would have had no idea what you were in for next. And it's interesting to think back about Sean's comments in that, you know, Wire cover story I mentioned, where he was sort of saying like electronic music is getting too scientific, like too complex for complexity's sake. You know, I wonder if he changed his mind about that. But at the same time, like I said, I think there's a lot of like emotion in these compositions. And at the same time, I agree with you that like there doesn't always have to be emotion. You know, something like Penja, okay, it's not like pretty, but it's like so amazing to just hear, like I said, these sounds disintegrate and then reassemble in a completely different shape. I hear a lot of emotion, but emotion's not totally important. But do you think that they're contradicting themselves or changing their minds on what they said earlier?
What do you mean said earlier?
About the sign, you know, they were like complaining. They were like, oh, Richard D. James, like some of these other artists. Like,
oh, yeah.
They're making like overly technical music. You know, they've lost the human touch or something. And now they went ahead and took the bold jump into the digital world.
It's just, I don't know. It's hard to like, you know, when you read that quote, it's like it reads as him being serious. But it's like you almost, I wonder if it was like kind of a joke or something. I don't know. Because
yeah.
It does really just seem like. You know, it's not like, oh, 15 years later, they started making stuff like that. It's like literally, you know,
yeah.
What has it been, you know, 6 months or something?
Yeah. And you can hear like on Chiasic, they're getting interested in it. Like we said, the Max MSP play.
Yeah, definitely.
I mean, that's becoming like a central feature, I think, on some of the tracks here. But yeah, maybe they were being disingenuous with that comment. But it's just interesting. Like immediately after saying it, they're like,
yeah,
all right, let's do it.
Exactly.
Well, what do you think are the, there are two bolded tracks on this album. What do you think they are?
I think Tilapia and, I thought Tilapia would probably be the only one. I'll go the third track. I don't know how to say it. Karachi.
Weirdly, it is Yeezland, which surprises me, honestly. But yeah, Yeezland and Tilapia. What are your favorite tracks here?
I think I could probably agree with that. I mean, Tilapia, I think, is like it seemed like from some of the things we heard online and all, you know, from listeners, it seems to be a bit of a fan favorite. I could see why. You know, I mean, it's a really good track. I like Yeezland. I don't know. I think it's like a really cool kind of beat. I like that, like the snare sound is like it's got like a crunch, and then there's like a weird like kind of suck noise at, you know, like the way yeah. the like snare like crunches and then like, you know, gets vacuumed up. I don't know. I think it's really an interesting sound.
Yeah, I love that track because of the way it keeps shifting shape like over and over again. You know, it's like the beat keeps like slowing down, not in like tempo, but like, you know what I mean? It's like
it's the one that makes me think of the cover, like you know, the most, I think. You know, like the old screensaver moving around, shifting and bouncing.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, you know, I love Tilapia. It has even an even better sense of like that small scale sound of like, I don't know, like coins falling out of your pocket or like or like, I don't know, so like a literal like needle dropping. You know, it's like I don't know, there's something about like the small, you know, all of these tracks, they have kind of like a very intimate feel to them that I don't know. It feels like you're listening to like a tiny, you know, tiny clock like working or something like that, or just like something small scale. I think it's fascinating how with like purely digital sound design, pretty much they're making a sense of size in the physical world or something. It's like really fucks with your head. A lot of these tracks fuck with my head. Honestly, I have a hard time picking a favorite song. I love Crib as like the heart of this release, as like the little key that unlocks the rest of the thing for me. But I don't know. I don't have a bad thing to say about this. I mean, I was like honestly completely bowled over by how good this is. Is there any like weak aspect to this that you weren't feeling as much?
No. I like this more than In Vain, I think. I think it's a it's I said that In Vain was one of the best EPs, you know, so far. I think Sickly Sweet is even better, and maybe the best EP we've gotten to so far. I'm not entirely sure if I like it more than Garbage or not, but you know, it's one that, you know, it could beat it, you know, at some point in the future, I think.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's the best EP we've talked about so far. I think it's like, I don't know, it's like a tiny masterpiece. I love that it's actually small scale. It's actually embracing the small scale, mm-hmm. not just in the sounds, but in like it's like a small suite of these interesting geometrical patterns and stuff. And it's just like, I don't know, really inventive. My only hang up is like, basically, you know, I'm trying hard to never jump ahead. You know, obviously I was listening to like Sign and Plus a lot, but to not jump ahead and just stick with what we're talking about. And so I wonder, is this just so exciting to me because it's the first like kind of digitally programmed thing I'm hearing? It's like a brand new sound world from Autechre. And like once we, you know, once I hear LP5, I won't think as much of this. You know what I'm saying? Like I'm like, damn, this is like blowing my mind. But is it just because it's the first like digital Autechre I'm hearing?
It could be. I mean, I think that's something we should, you know, touch on next episode, because you're right. You know, I mean, a lot of times, this time was a little easier because, you know, I hadn't, you know, like I said, like Sickly Sweet or Chiastic Slide was a little, you know, more new to me. So, and I like just was, you know, really falling in love, but you're right. You know, like listening to Tripartite and stuff, it's like, oh man, I always just kind of want to like, you know, move on to the next one. And so like, yeah, maybe we're pumping Sickly Sweet up a little bit extra just because it is a taste of LP5. You know, like I better not spoil it, but I love that record. Spoiler, I'll love most of the records that we talk
about. It's true. I mean, we'll talk about this, I think, next episode, but it's like, obviously people like to divide Autechre into eras.
Yeah.
And it feels like, you know, we are entering the second era of Autechre. So I just like hesitate, I don't know, to like shower so many praises on this because I think it's like absolutely brilliant, honestly. But it's like, what if it's just because it's the first step in the new era? But all right, you know, we're going long as we always do. And I want to save just 1 minute to talk about our rankings so far. How did you end up ranking all of the releases we've talked about on this podcast thus far?
All right. So this far, we've got 12 of them. So
12? Oh, what's the 12th?
Well, both EPs.
I only got 11 here.
Oh, Basecad.
Oh, I ain't ranking Basecad.
You told me. I texted you about 12. This.
I told you not to.
No, you said did. I'll pull it up.
All right, fine. Rank it.
All right. Well, it doesn't really matter. Cavity Job, obviously the worst one. Basecad, second worst one. Anti at 10, Lego Feet at 9, Anvil Vapor at 8, In Vain at 7, Sickly Sweet at 6, Garbage at 5, Incunabula, Amber. I went Chiastic Slide over Amber at number 2, but I wasn't brave enough to put it over Tripartite quite yet at number 1.
Okay, all right. Well, I've only got 11 here, but you know, Cavity Job is last, and then sure, I'll put the Basecad EP at, you know, after that. So then at 10, I got Anti EP, 9, Lego Feet, 8, Anvil Vapor, 7, Garbage, 6, Incunabula, 5, En Vain, 4, Sickly Sweet, 3, Amber, 2, Chiastic Slide, 1, Tripartite. So pretty similar, but I feel like I am a little bit more hyped about these two EPs, and that also might be that they were just like new to me, but I just felt like these past 2 weeks I was like in heaven because it was like three releases that I really, really, really like.
Yeah, I think from my ratings on Rate Your Music, I think I ended up bumping everything up at least a star or a half star.
Is Chiastic like a 5-star record for you now?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I put that as a 5, and then you know, I bumped the EPs up a half star each one. So
wow. Yeah, I mean, great year, 1997. Are there any other closing thoughts you have about this chapter in the Autechre journey?
No, I think we covered most of it. All right, well, what do you think about Chiastic Slide, In Vain, and Sickly Sweet? Remember, next week's bonus episode is going to be all about your emails, so send them in. Plus, we're also going to get into that first Peel Session record. Send us your thoughts, gonkcastpod@gmail.com. Next full episode in 2 weeks, LP5 and EP7. So let us know what you think, gonkcastpod@gmail.com. If you like the show, help us out by subscribing and leaving us a 5-star review wherever you get your podcast. Look us up on YouTube. Stay connected on Twitter and Instagram. That is @GonkCastPod. And we'll see you next time.
See ya.